found this in Gunner Room. Gunner Mirror. Me.
What is it?
Well, it's. It's sick performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me,
Aaron O'Brien,
and
Andrew, it's a fake, Dume.
He is a fake, because you haven't heard him since the Doctor's episode.
Andrew came in to visit with us. We are now, right now, three men who are uncomfortably very close.
Yeah.
My balls are on Dave's knees, and my head is in Andrew's lap. So it's
anyone got a notebook that I can put over my lap or something like that? I'm feeling a little embarrassed.
If only Faith was here. She'd make some sort of gay joke.
We have a Playgirl magazine we can put over there.
Synthaholics Season 2, Playgirl style, guys.
Our loins are everywhere.
You know you want this. This is what you've been waiting for a whole year.
Gay sex. So here we are.
Alamo, wherefore art thou, Alamo?
Oh, God.
So
freaking Alamo.
We are here to speak to you about a very special episode called Pale Moonlight.
In the pale
moonlight.
It's been a while since we've talked about just an episode.
Yeah, it just seems like we just have a lot of things going on.
Yes, it is.
Special guests and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very special.
So, Pale Moonlight, Deep Space Nine, in case you didn't know, is
Season 6.
Season 6. It came out on April 15th, 1998. What were you doing in 1998?
High school?
Oh.
Maybe? No? I don't know. Yeah, probably high school.
Andrew?
School for 200!
Well, let's see. 1998, I was 15, 16, just learning to drive, chronically masturbating because I didn't have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh, so I guess I wasn't in high school yet. You're a little bit older than me. Junior high?
So you were just chronically masturbating.
Yeah. There was no car license. Just
not even trying to drive.
Oh, just no. Locking yourself in the bathroom.
No, I remember on 9/9/99 is when Final Fantasy VIII came out, and that's when I was 15, and I was I didn't want to go get my driver's permit because I wanted to play Final Fantasy VIII.
Because your shaft was all chafed.
The Final Fantasy is real, man. It's real. So
Tifa.
So this was Tifa was Final Fantasy VII.
Oh,
so
yeah, that's right.
Rinoa was Final Fantasy VIII. Rinoa and Stealthy. Quistis. But no.
Quistis sounds kind of dirty.
No, but so a year before that, I don't remember. I was in Jackson, Mississippi, if you really want to know my geographic location.
I think we just fell into a very deep rabbit hole here.
Sorry.
Dave's long, sordid history.
You heard it here first, guys.
Let's get back to the episode. Yes. Pale Moonlight.
Don't ask me qualifying questions if you don't want to hear about it.
He's got a point. I mean,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
It is one of your favorites, Dave.
Yes, I love this episode.
And Andrew, you wanted to speak about this episode, so this is an episode you particularly like.
Well, I think we took a bunch of his favorites.
Uh huh.
Well, yeah, most of my favorites you guys did when you went over your five favorite.
And we ran out the door with them. He was like, come back! Those are mine!
Yeah. So, but this is by far one of my favorite episodes. It's so anti-Star Trek.
It's very
anti-Star Trek. In its theme and in its ideas and in the way it's portraying Sisko. And it's like he's a human being because, I don't know, Star Trek captains tend to be these demigods that are just, I don't know, they're too goody-goody, like Picard. Picard he's Mr. Diplomat, he's Mr. Nice Guy. Let's come to a common consensus.
Picard's the closest thing to Jesus you'll ever get
in Star Trek.
He was so good about everything.
Yeah. So it starts off, you're basically having, not Picard, Sisko giving his personal log, and he's talking about all the things that are going on and the Starfleet personnel that are being killed during the Dominion War. And he decides that he is going to basically, or he admits that he's going to bring the Romulans into the war. That's his plan.
Kicking and screaming, most likely.
Well, which of course they'll do. And this is a
passive aggressively kicking and screaming. I'm sorry.
This is a different. Yeah, this is a very different episode because you actually have Sisko addressing you directly as if he's having a conversation with you. So this is quite different compared to
Aaron. Would you say that he's breaking the fourth wall?
I don't think he's breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, gotcha! Come on, no.
Gotcha!
No, he is breaking the fourth wall. No.
See,
he
doesn't directly.
He doesn't directly address the audience because he's like personal log, Stardate, whatever. He's like, what is the date, computer? Because he can't even remember. He's so stressed out.
But he's looking directly in the camera.
But that's because that's just where the computer is.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it has a bit of a that kind of fourth wall.
He's leaning on the fourth wall, but he hasn't broken through it.
If he admitted that he was, you know, talking to you about Star Trek and that he was, you know, that he's an actor and he's playing a part or something to that nature, then I would say he's like, if he,
like Deadpool, case in point, where he directly talks to the audience.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's a blatant breaking of the fourth wall. I'm just saying that he did break the fourth wall. It was just more in a passive, implied way.
Well, I mean, like, it wasn't, I mean, they could have put the camera anywhere. They just wanted to put it in front of him.
It'd be great if it was like an upshot from the toilet.
Dingleberries.
The whole episode.
Dingleberries everywhere.
Cisco's balls just hanging down.
That wouldn't be primetime 1998 television material.
Might HBO. Be primetime now.
HBO wouldn't even do that now.
So then he gives this little speech on about his personal log, and then the episode continues where he gets into a debate with Dax about his plan to bring the Romulans in.
So she kind of plays the Romulan role.
Yeah.
They kind of role play a little bit. It's kind of sexy. He pulls out a whip. Oh wait, no, that's not what happens in this episode.
Says, "Old man, bend over."
I've got the beads.
Jesus Christ! This episode. So she says that he's going to need solid proof to convince the Romulans to join with the Federation against the Dominion. His next action is he contacts Garak because of his skills.
Garak's got them skills and them beads. Oh, I know. I mean, with contacts in Cardassia.
Mm-hmm. And he is going to use his resources to contact Cardassia Prime, and they are going to try to intrigue the Romulans, should we say, to think that something is happening.
Yes, they've got a low-down, dirty plan to trick the Romulans. They want to make a hologram on a special kind of data rod.
Well, to be fair, that's not the original plan. Garak was supposed to go out and get some information from his Cardassian contacts, and they end up all dying.
Oh, yeah.
And then Garak goes, well, why don't we just manufacture the evidence? Kind of this false flag operation.
And then he's like, well, I thought it was the whole stick of the Alpha Quadrant, right? This is what you told me.
Yeah,
this is what you told me, right?
Really using Sisko's words against him.
Oh. Right. Garak is definitely playing Sisko a lot during this.
Oh, definitely.
And I think
bet none of his friends really died.
Yeah, they're all still alive. He just didn't try.
He's just like, yeah, I didn't even call them. I'll just tell you they're all dead so we can do my plan instead.
Well, right. Garak's pretty pissed off because of the Gul Dukat's daughter dying during the first invasion of DS9.
Oh, yeah. Because Garak was all about that half Cardassian, half Bajoran.
Yeah.
Tang.
Oh, my God. So, So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, you know how they have, like, the ridges on their nose? Do you think they got the ridges on, they got ridges on their clit?
I'm sure there's ridges all over the place. I'm sure there's ridges down
there. That's just like their spots all the way down. Major Kira is like, there's ridges all the way down.
It's ruffled.
For his pleasure, right?
They're like... like potato chips.
Pringles.
next, Sisko learns the Dominion have conquered Beta Zed, which I think is probably the biggest travesty in this whole
episode. Sexy women who can read your thoughts have been captured by the soulless 3-year-olds.
Yeah, they're like, we kill you. We kill you.
Do you have Ketra Cellulite? I want some Ketra Cellulite. Shoot it up.
I don't know. I mean, an entire planet of women who can read your mind. The fact that they got conquered, is that such a bad thing for the Federation? I mean...
I think so. I think.
Well, how do you figure?
You get some good counselors out of there.
Man, I think... Honestly, because it's complete honesty. There's nothing they haven't thought or heard of already. So it's not like this is like new stuff.
And remember, when they hit their 40s or whatever, their sex drive like quadruples.
Yeah, so this is...
That's why
it's,
you know, Riker...
territory.
That's
here.
Why Riker waited for Deanna like Troy milks. To get that old before he married.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is going to be good stuff, and these guys—it's like wasted on the Dominion. They don't even understand.
Yeah, aren't they eunuchs too?
They're
right?
Just bred in like these test tubes, and like they the oldest one is like 4. So I mean, they don't live very long.
The
old man of 4.
I am the first.
I remember back in my day, we didn't even have clear test tubes.
It was all kind of opaque.
Yeah, opaque. We didn't even get to see through when we were growing in it.
Well, we just grow in Ketracel White. Ketracel White's not see through.
Oh, jeez.
Ketracel White gumbo.
Ketracel White shrimp.
So, because they've taken Beta Zed, they have striking power now to Alpha Centauri, Andor, Tellarite Prime, and Vulcan.
And
so,
just if you don't know astronomy, Alpha Centauri is the closest star to our star.
That's right.
I think I think your guys' listeners would definitely know that.
Well, just putting it out there.
And I was just putting that out there. But yeah.
Thank you.
And well, you know. I gotta contribute something.
So this is kind of even puts more fire under Sisko to get things done. He thinks now we've gotta move. So they invite the Senator Venrek. That's
Renak.
Renak.
It's a fake.
To Deep Space Nine. And this is where they're going to negotiate the Romulan non-aggression pact with the Dominion, and see if they can persuade him to join the war.
They get this alien. They rescue him from the Klingons because he's getting ready to be executed to help forge this data rod. You know, another. They have to get the rod from a guy who wants like 220 something liters of myomimetic gel. And Bashir has got some very qualms about handing over this biomimetic gel.
Yeah, he was like, I need this order in writing. And Sisko obviously realized he was going to need that, so he had it ready for him.
He had it ready.
I figured as much.
I figured, yeah. Here you go.
Yeah.
I really wish this would have come up later. I don't think this gel came up really again.
I never heard it in any Star Trek that I can recollect.
But why would you?
Well, they said it could, be used in all these horrible things. I mean, it could have been fallout from this episode, which would have been great.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, they could have taken that and expanded on it, for sure.
It's like, we gave the guy the stuff, now we've got to stop them from doing all the horrible things he's going to do.
Right. So they give him, they get him this data rod, and he basically believes them. With the data rod, the Romulan senator, and he buys into it
until he says it's a fake.
It's a fake.
So they have to put the holographic forgery thing put together for the Klingon prisoner, right?
Yep.
You know, you can chime in anytime you want. Fucking co-host my ass.
Well, we're not the ones looking up the episode on Wikipedia, so.
Well, this is your favorite episode, so if you want to, like, move along here.
Okay, well,
Move along home? What? Move along home? Wow.
Yeah, maybe.
Just skip along.
A little crotchety there.
The worst episode ever. No, but, so they bring the guy, they get the forgery. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things is that Garrick's like, oh, I told him he's going to stay in his quarters, but I made it imply that the door's going to explode if he tries to leave.
And then Sisko's like, I hope that's just an impression. And then he's like,
don't get
nothing about down the minutiae. Yeah. But, so they give it to Renex, impressed by the hologram, but he's like, I want to inspect it. So he goes ahead and he inspects the data rod, and Sisko's all concerned. He's quotes his father saying, like, oh, the souffle is going... The souffle is going to rise or it's not. There's not a damn thing you can do about it, so you might as well just wait.
Nothing like
little homespun wisdom.
Homespun Cajun wisdom.
Yeah. But he walks in, and then Vrenak, you know, nods to his guards, and they leave, and he goes... It's a fake. I don't know why he did it that way.
But it's so great.
Yeah.
if you YouTube, it's a fake. It's like 30 minutes of like Renek going, it's a fake.
It's a fake.
And then another episode where Sisko, like, where he's a writer and he's like, no, it's real. And it's like 30 minutes of this going back and forth. It's a fake.
I've watched the entire video. I will never get back those 30 minutes.
Wow. 30 minutes of it?
Exaggerating, but it was close to like 15 for sure.
Wow. But it's like two very short scenes over and over and over again. Yeah. I sent this to Andrew at work a couple months ago, and he thought there was gonna be some payoff at the end, and there wasn't.
There was no
payoff. It was, you know, it was like bad sex. It was just like, oh, well, I hope I don't have an STD.
I'm sorry.
You're welcome. Yes,
I'm sorry.
You're welcome.
It's sex, it ends in apology. I'm sorry.
That was bad.
Oh. No, but
really, it never happens to me, I swear.
Never, ever. We're not going to say anything more.
Yeah, no, we're just going to move on. So, you know, after that, he
goes on his merry way.
He leaves Steve Face Nine, and Sisko's like, well, I'm fucked now. You know, I'm screwed. You know, oh, well.
And then
I'm off the hook because Starfleet Intelligence gave me their blessing. So I'm all good.
And then, you know, they go to the, you know, a recurring thing in this episode is they go to, like, the briefing room, and there's this casualty report
that they
go see every, you know, every Friday.
Yeah, they're always looking at,
every Friday. And then, like, it comes out that Worf's like, oh, well, there's this Romulan ship that blew up.
Right, right.
Yeah, and it turns out that he... how do you start? Vrenak ends up dying, and and when Sisko hears about this, he goes down to Garrick and
to his nice little tailor shop.
He just gives him a haymaker. He just knocks him on his ass,
beating him.
Yeah,
and then it's like, and then he's like, I think this is exactly what you wanted to happen.
Right.
And he's like, look, it's like, you got the Romulans in the war. I think they'll join the war because they have the data rod. But they knew it's a fake.
Yeah.
But any imperfections in the recording would be assumed because of the damage to the ship.
Yeah, it should be mentioned, though, like, we kind of skipped this part, but earlier in the episode, he says, when Vrenak arrives, he tells Sisko, and he goes, I'm just going to go check out his ship for any kind of intelligence or any kind of information. And Sisko goes, okay, don't get caught, and paraphrasing it, of course. But and then he finds out about this later, and then he goes into Garrick's shop.
Garrick is the person who
did it.
Put the bomb or whatever he did.
And made it look like the Dominion. Dominion did it.
And he also killed the alien that made the forgery on the data rod.
Yes.
And then, you know, he's like, all that got sacrificed. You got the Romulans in the war. All that got sacrificed was one Romulan, one criminal, and one Federation officer who had to give up his morals.
Right.
Yes.
And,
yes,
like, it was so great, and Sisko's like... Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
And then it ends with him talking to the camera while he's doing this log to his computer. Okay, fair enough. He's talking to his computer and he's like, I can live with this.
I can't. It's like, are you trying to convince us or yourself?
Self, exactly.
I know, right? Yeah. That's how I felt too.
But this is just a beautifully shot episode. I love the speech that he's got in his quarters. Like, I mean, yeah, it's very, like, leaning against the fourth wall. He's looking directly into the camera, but it just, like, it just works. I mean, if this was, like, you know, shot nowadays, they might have been, you know, funky with it. You know, put cameras in the corners of the set, you know, looking down at them different angles.
Yeah.
And it's flipping around. That way they get, like, you know, the camera with, like, you know, like the time and date on it or something like that. You know, that would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's more like a modern type of thing.
Right.
That you would see. I mean, like, it's stuck in its time of 1998, where everything was very by the numbers. And most television, not just Star Trek. I mean, everything was pretty by the numbers with how things were shot.
It is unique because I don't think there is any other Star Trek episode that's like this. That, I mean, there you have somebody addressing the camera directly. Like on a constant basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think the closest I can really think of is a Voyager episode where she's doing a personal log, but it's not nearly leaning on the fourth wall as much as Sisko did in this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a powerful episode. It definitely makes you think, you know, I mean, because they are at war, and war often is about, you know, making sacrifices that are acceptable and, you know, how to make that judgment, and also how you actually can believe that that's, you know, when you make that judgment that it's the correct thing to do, or if you've gone too far. It's very, it's, and like you said, it kind of seems to break a lot of Star Trek.
Yeah. Star Trek. It's a very anti Star Trek episode. It's about subterfuge. It's about the Federation being kind of dirty handed because, Let's go back to the point that Starfleet Intelligence did sign off on this plan, so they're fully aware of it. You're seeing a captain that's very flawed compared to the prior captains of Picard and Kirk, who were not to be. I'm not trying to downplay how great characters they were, but they were kind of two-dimensional characters
in some ways.
In a lot of ways, they were. Kirk kind of had that dashing kind of. Almost like an 18th century sea captain kind of kind of vibe to him. And then Picard was the ever diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
And this is showing a captain that's deeply flawed and has definitely made the wrong choice. He's made the unethical, amoral choice of sacrificing these people and sacrificing his self-respect in order to get the Romulans in the war.
I see that. My only counter argument to that is that here we are in the future of Star Trek, where we are hopefully living the life of, you know, to be your best self, especially if you are part of the Federation. And if you have become captain or you're in the command, this should be something that you're almost made for, you know, or this is this is who you are in your DNA and how you were raised and that kind of thing. So, like, when you say, like, a Picard seems two-dimensional, I get what you're saying because he's almost too squeaky clean, but maybe that's the person he always should have been. Like, this is the self-realized person that, you know, we all hope to be. And same thing with Kirk as well. And, you know, Sisko does have a lot of rough edges, which is makes him more interesting. I'll give you that. But maybe because we're in the future, it's to be expected.
Well, I mean, like, I think Picard got to be this perfect this perfect archetype because, I mean, like, there hadn't been any huge major wars.
Right.
Like, he's coming off the
Klingon Federation war.
And the Klingon Federation, the big war was before Kirk's time.
Even. Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, like, he's had, like, his whole lifetime of no huge major conflicts. I mean, they had the Kittimer Accords thing, but I mean, like, you know, because the Enterprise-C got stuck into that. But, I mean, like, still, right. Like, most of his life, it's been probably, you know, no major wars have happened. So, I mean, like, he's got all this, you know, goodness in him, and he just hasn't had all the darkness to kind of, you know, bring him down. Whereas Sisko, you know, he met the Borg at Wolf 359. His wife died. Like, all those Federation ships got blown up. I mean, like, it didn't even have to be a war. That one Borg cube wiped out a huge fleet. So, I mean, Sisko, we don't know anything about him before this. I mean, I'm sure there's books about it, but I mean, as an audience just watching the show, we don't know anything about him before this. So he's a scarred person after seeing this huge, like, I mean, it was a one ship war that was waged on them at Wolf 359. Like, it was a massacre.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring up a good point that, you know, there hasn't been any really major conflicts in the Federation since that conflict with the Klingons that ended in the Khitomer Accord. So when you look at it that way, maybe this is Sisko. He is in totally unfamiliar territory. He's trying to steer a ship through troubled waters because there's no precedence for this before. Like, Kirk would have no idea how to really handle this. Picard, because there's not, I mean, we look at something that he was going through right there, and it's common everyday stuff for us. This is something that we see in our world every day. So this has been almost, what, close to 60, 70 years since he's seen any kind of war like this and any kind of atrocities that are committed in war.
And even with the Klingon War, this is quadrant-wide war. Mm-hmm. This isn't just like, you know, one alien species versus another alien species. This is like an invasion force that threatens the entire quadrant. It's almost unfathomable amount of space
that I guess my point was that he's kind of like he's like, it's almost like he's new to war and he's got to learn how to wage war again because it's been
everyone is.
Yeah.
Okay, but let me just put this as a counter as well, is that here they are. They have gone to the academy. They have probably done extensive, teachings on warfare and what happens during warfare and the decisions you have to make. I mean, they did go to command school. I mean,
Kobayashi Maru.
I mean, all sorts of things like that that they've had to play through. I mean, when you anybody even today, if you go, you know, to like, you know, West Point, they go over all sorts of scenarios and commands and how to react and what, you know, to expect and all sorts of things to kind of prep or prime the officer to what they are to what's to be expected of them at certain points. So this is where I have a problem, is because he's never faced this personally himself, but he has had plenty of history. He has had the education. And then on top of that, I mean, the Dominion War didn't just happen. I mean, it's been like a whole buildup towards it, and we've had the conflict between Bajor and Cardassia before all that happened. So there's been a lot that's happened to him that would, I would say, slowly prime him, maybe not to something to this magnitude, but that he would have maybe a better, he would be a good person to have his arms around it.
I
understand, and I think I agree with you to a certain extent, because he does have all that training. He did go to command school. He did go to officer training school. So he's going to have that historical evidence and just, you know, the experience of, say, his instructors or whatever. But it's one thing to learn about a war. It's another thing to be in a war.
Well, of course, yeah.
So I think these are almost like command growing pains for him. Like, he doesn't want to admit that he have to do something like this, but he's doing it anyways.
But a war of this scale has never been precedented in any of Star Trek that we know of, like a quadrant wide war. Everything
we've never seen that ever painted, and until we've gotten Deep Space Nine, have we ever seen any type of real warfare? I'm two minds of it. One, it's like, yes, I understand Garrick said, you know, a criminal died and, you know, a senator died and, you know, basically some of your ethics have been, you know, compromised. But that being all said, that he's, you know, Sisko made a bargain with the devil when he went to Garrick for all this. And I would hope that if we were watching Kirk in this position or Picard, that they would have a different kind of read on it and even a different I don't know, maybe a different play than what he did. So I'm, you know, I have no idea what that would exactly be. But it's a there's a lot to consider right there, because I think there are other alternatives.
I can see Kirk going along with this way more than Picard.
Kirk would, for sure. Kirk would, for sure. Kirk could go with this. Yeah, I could see Kirk making that deal.
It's, would definitely it, do it. It's just weird because it's definitely there was something premeditated. It wasn't like he was in the heat of commander in battle and he had to make a split decision. This was something that was premeditated. It was planned out, and it was you know, definite subterfuge. It was spying. It was a false flag operation, and it's just totally not Star Trek when you look at TNG and the original series.
Yeah.
But then again, Deep Space Nine was its own separate thing. It was the Wild West. It was supposed to be like the saloon, like on the edge of nowhere. Like this is the wild frontier, which is Star Trek has always, you know, always purported to be. The final frontier. This is the frontierism. You know, Roddenberry pitched Star Trek as wagon train to the stars. Like the frontier, like the Wild West. And this, more than any of the shows, was the Wild West as far as Star Trek goes.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely could see it as like a border town on, you know, the Mexican-Texas border.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have, you know, banditos coming across and raiding.
I still
would want to believe that the ethics and the morals of what Star Trek's supposed to be and supposed to uphold would prevail. So this is why this, I do like the episode. I mean, it is a very interesting episode. It's fun to watch, but it makes me shake my head at the end of it. So, and that Sisko says, I'm fine with it, you know, cause I mean, he did just not just like Garrick said, you know, two people died and whatever, but you know, he did put a whole race civilization at war with another. I mean, yes, the war was coming to them whether they liked it or not, and the Romulans should have figured that one out anyways, but I have just a hard time, you know, like thinking like I'm all right, I'm just allocated a lot of people's death, you know.
Yeah,
and you're the person who made that decision.
Yeah, because he brought the Romulans to the war. That means all the Romulans that die in this war are going to be on his their blood is on his hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they're not humans, so he's fine with that.
Dirty Romulans. Pointy-haired bastards.
Green-blooded asshole.
Yeah.
It's not that unibrow. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Those uniforms suck.
Permanent frowns. Actually, Vrenak had a little bit different uniform.
I actually said unibrow.
Oh, unibrow. You know, anyway, Aaron said uniform.
I said uniform.
Aaron said uniform. Yeah, so, yeah. But Vrenak had a little bit different uniform. Like, when I was watching this again, I was like, I really wish Deep Space Nine would get upscaled to high definition, because I'm sure there's a lot more detail on that thing that we just can't see because of the low resolution of you know, the 480.
Yeah.
But, I want to throw something at you guys. Something I was thinking about. Like,
yeah, I've been waiting for this question because you mentioned it earlier.
But like, what would you think? Like, I would love to see this episode. Like, I wish this was a 2-part episode, where like the second part of the episode was all from Garrick's perspective.
That would be cool. Like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, I would just love to see the Garrick perspective. I wanted to see like how he threatened the guy that, you know, that his door was going to explode. I want to see him kill the guy. I want to see like all the stuff that he did. I want to see him go talk to his contacts, and then his contacts are like, "Yeah, you should just do your plan." I want to see him plant the bomb. Like, I just like, I'm sure he did other stuff too. He probably even talked to Quark. Like, there could have been like a really strong like Quark Garrick dynamic in an episode that was like the Garrick side of this.
Why would Quark and Garrick be where would there be a dynamic there? Because I mean, he barely talked to Quark in that entire episode. The only one that talked to Quark was Sisko.
But the alien that forged the data rod killed, attacked Quark. And Quark, Quark was going to press charges. And I'm sure Garrick's aware of this. And so I could see, him going to Quark and being like, how do you want this guy to die?
Well, Sisko's talking to him, he's just kind of like in the background. And he's like, just, you know, putting his finger to his throat. Yeah, like, you know, you're gonna die, Quark. Just take the bribe.
You know, but like, it would have been interesting. And then you know, he goes to Quark and like asks him how he wants an alien to die. Like, because Quark wouldn't be above like sentencing someone to death,
right?
I don't know.
I could see it happening. I guess other than seeing, I mean, the episode that you're proposing, other than seeing Garak in a full episode, which is great to see him in, that's probably the only reason I'd want to see that. Other than that, I don't know if the story would be as interesting.
I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't be. I mean, it's not the conflict of Sisko, because I guess that's what makes it interesting, because Sisko is supposed to have these values, but he cast them aside for Garak's values. But Garak's such a compelling character. I'm sure they could have written a great episode around Garak. And, you know, seeing his side of the events. Because I'm sure there's more to it than what we saw.
And I agree, but I mean, how are you going to do that? You're going to have two episodes in a row, for 2 weeks, and it's going to be the same episode just from a different point of view.
Yeah, I know.
It's
2020 thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you were going to do, like, maybe, like, a trilogy episode where it's, like, each of the two prior episodes ended in a cliffhanger.
Or split into two parts where you're just going back and forth between the parts. That way you don't see the resolution to the second episode. But, like, it would have been nice for it to play back and forth a little bit.
I don't know. I kind of enjoyed the episode the way it was created. And I don't really think... Because Garak, although he's a really cool character and I like him, you know what he's going to do. He's going to kill who he needs to kill. He's going to spy on who he needs to spy on. He's going to manipulate who he needs to manipulate. Sisko is, you know, getting into the dirt. He's rolling around with the rest of us, you know, amoral, you know.
Yeah.
That's terrible probably, people. That's probably the most interesting part of it is just to see somebody, you know, fall from their higher position.
Yeah, their pedestal.
Which I, you know, like, again, I'm still not crazy about, but it makes for a good episode.
Good drama, definitely.
And I'm interested too why you two find this episode so compelling.
Because it's so different than anything else that there is Star Trek. I mean, like, reading through the wiki, the Memory Alpha, like it's voted like in multiple different things, like at least top 10 all Star Trek all time, and also like the top like 5 or 6 Deep Space Nine of all time. Like, it's hugely critically acclaimed.
Okay, but that's everybody else. I mean, there's a lot of people like things that are complete garbage. So
this is true.
But I mean, I'm not calling this episode garbage. I'm just saying that. But what makes this compelling to you personally?
The way it was done, like the log, the way he gives the log, and then it kind of shows kind of what happened from, you know, his point of view. Just the use of Garak. I mean, almost any Garak episode's like guaranteed to be gold. I mean, like, he's, you know, Andy Robinson's a fantastic actor. Can't go wrong with a Garak episode. I mean, I would say probably the Garak episodes are probably like the top 20-ish of Deep Space Nine all throughout. Because, I mean, I don't even know how many Garak episodes there are, but they've got to be in the top tier of episodes, probably.
No, I agree. I mean, Garak's is a fun person to see. So, Garak, and because of the way it's shot.
I'm going to disagree with Dave on this one. I think the way it was shot was kind of cheesy. I think it was lazy cinematography, and I really think...
It's a product of its age, man.
You know, no, it's not a product of its age.
It is.
I mean, some of it...
Give me something more dynamic from 1998.
Some of it was kind of hitting you over the head. Like, I mentioned this to you earlier, where he has the... You see him, and he's talking to the camera when he's not breaking the fourth wall, technically. But he's talking to the camera, and he starts off in his full uniform. And then as he goes on in the story, it goes back to him talking to the camera. And it's like each time he does something bad or something that's against his morals, you see a little part of the uniform kind of come off. And then it ends up, you know, and I'm not saying that Sisko's doing a striptease to his bad behavior. Oh. But I am saying that, you know, by the time he gets to the point where he realizes what's going on and what's going to be happening and the terrible thing that he's really done to kind of save himself, he's got his uniform pushed open. He has the pips, the things that prove that he's a Starfleet officer, kind of folded back, and it's like you just see from his, instead of the uniform, you see kind of his you see the flesh underneath, you see his chest underneath, and it's like, yeah, this is a human behind this uniform. And as much as the Federation is wonderful and good and everything, it's run by humans, and they're going to make mistakes and they're going to make compromises.
Uh-huh. That's very well observed. I don't think I have picked that any of that up before. So.
It's metaphoric that he's bearing his soul.
It's good
television to do. It's metaphoric, and I like that.
It's good symbolism and everything, but it's kind of hitting you over the head. Like when I saw that, I'm just like, geez, come on.
Well, Aaron didn't even notice it, so it's subtle to a point.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention to that much.
I wasn't paying attention to it that much either. I didn't really pick up on that until I read the Memory Alpha, where they're saying they wanted him to be doing that because it gives the passage of time because it cuts away to the flashbacks that he's of course giving an account to his log, but you're seeing it happen. So the removal of clothes is passage of time. He's getting ready to go to bed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it also symbolizes the bearing of his soul.
Right.
Aaron and I didn't really pick that up just watching it,
but that's my own personal opinion. I didn't think the way I wish I was going, but I think the ideas behind that episode are what's really the themes behind it, because they're big themes. Like it's a very Machiavellian theme. Does the end justify the means? It's that big question there. And secondly, it's showing that the Federation is a human institution, and since it's a human institution, it is a flawed institution, and it's going to make, like I said before, these compromises and these mistakes.
Well, we've seen the Federation make tons of flawed mistakes.
True.
I'm along with you there, but why is that compelling to you?
In my experience from when I was watching the original series and, The Next Generation, before Deep Space Nine, you always knew in the back of your mind that, the Enterprise is going to make it out of this. They're going to do really well. They're going to push their philosophical and their ethical agenda.
Right.
And it's like, I am not a fan of the goody good. I am a terrible person, and I like seeing other terrible people. Oh,
right.
I like it. It made me connect with a character because it's like, Sisko. Yeah, what he's doing is wrong. There's no other way to slice it. But at the same time, it's a very pragmatic and it's a very practical way to handle this. He's making the right decision, but he's not making the right decision.
Interesting. Okay, I can play along with that. It still doesn't meet my criteria, but I still enjoy the episode.
So what do you think of the
episode? You're making it pretty known that you're not a big fan of it.
I like the episode. It is enjoyable to watch it, and there's a lot of it's entertaining to go along to see his journey. Again, I feel like a lot of times, and I'm not blaming this episode per se, but I think we see a lot of either violence or I don't want to say violence, but just the easy way to, in any kind of writing, just to go towards violence as an easy way out of entertaining or writing or movies or anything. We see that too often today. I don't think anybody really puts any effort to think like, well, what else could the outcome be? What else could the answer be to this, the solution to this? And, and I'm not putting it just on this episode, of course, because this is a kind of a broader subject, but sometimes I feel like it's just like the lazy way out. If we want to talk Man of Steel of, Superman killing Zod, that seemed like lazy writing. I don't have the solution right there in front of me. But I'm sure if you put me in a room with a couple other writers, I'm sure we could have figured that out.
Yeah.
Just simple things like that. I'm not saying that this episode is different because they are at war with the Dominion. They do need some kind of help, and this is sort of like their ace in the hole to bring out, and hopefully this will, you know, change the tide of the war. But, you know, and I understand the tactic and the, how he did that. I just, I wonder if there was a different way to go about doing it than going to Garrick, you know, to be so underhanded as well. That's I think that's where I get kind of just like, that's your play.
I mean,
Garrick's more interesting, you know.
Is he more interesting, or is he just, are we just getting our, you know, our unnatural, you know, taste for violence placated?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, but, I mean, see your
but
point.
But he's a I mean, he's a great actor. I mean, a great character.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, Sisko in his everything that he does, his delivery during everything, how it's filmed is very dynamic. It's very it keeps you interested and keeps you captivated. But that all being said, I just would hope I'd hope for more.
Sisko restored Quark's faith in the rule of acquisition 97. Every man has his yes. price. That I was mean, great.
That's just you
like
know,
it's just you know.
But again, it's
even
like
Quark. Even Quark got to.
But this is like, Quark. I mean, Quark is not who you want to aim towards as.
Yeah, that's who, not someone you want to have a philosophical footing on.
He's still one of my favorite characters.
No, he's a great character, and so is Garrick. I mean, they're great characters to watch because they are so bad. I mean, but we do like to watch bad characters. We like to see people do awful things because it is entertaining.
This humanizes Sisko. He's more human than Kirk or Picard because he has his price. Quark made him have his
price. Okay, but I'm just going to go back to Superman here for a second because I don't watch Superman to see somebody do what I would do. I watch Superman or I read a Superman comic to see like, oh, he's better than me because he thinks differently. His outcome is not to kill; it's to uplift and do something different. You know, and I guess that's where I'm come from. It's like
yeah.
I'm not
saying you're wrong, but I mean that's more TNG then.
I know I get what you're saying too, but and it was established almost immediately that you know Sisko is not going to be the Picard type,
especially
character.
Since but he's so pissed at Picard in the whole like first right. episode. Emissary, he's like, man, I don't want Picard. I don't have to do what Picard says.
I just
bald. I'm not going to be bald.
I kind of compare it to like the difference between and not to sound like a pretentious asshole, but between like Greek art, Greek sculpture and art, and Roman sculpture and art, you look at Greek sculpture and art, it's the ideal human being. And
right.
that's what I think Star Trek, the original series, and TNG is doing is the yeah. ideal human being. And DS9, it started showing
it's a
humans.
Photograph.
It is. It's a photograph. You're seeing all the wrinkles. You're seeing the blemishes.
Yes.
And I think that makes it
humanizes
more.
It.
Well, not only does it humanize it, but it also makes it more of an accomplishment that they got as far as they did, because you're really seeing, look at these creatures, this species is fucked up, but look what it was still able to do.
We've come a long way, but sometimes we still have to, you know, get back on our knees.
Yeah, sometimes we got to go back to cavemen and, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, there's always different tastes. I mean, are you going to read, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird or Bukowski or something? I mean, they're completely different characters and people and I
like apples and oranges.
Yeah, I mean it's like you read one for one reason, you read one for another reason. But when you go to the trough of Star Trek, I mean you're going for a certain reason. I mean that's my point. It's like
yeah.
It is good to see those mistakes being made again, but I mean I think it's a pretty big.
I mean, it breaks the mold, and not every DS9 episode breaks the mold.
Oh yeah, some of it is like very within that Star Trek framework. Like, but this episode, like when the Dominion War started, it that's when it veered away from the original spirit of Star Trek.
I agree.
Well, Gene Roddenberry was also dead at this point, so
they're like, let's do whatever we want, man.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, Daddy's not home.
Yeah.
We can do whatever we want now.
Right, let's jump on the couch.
But I mean, but at the same time, Gene Roddenberry's ideas weren't always like the best ideas. I mean, like,
no, I agree.
Some of his ideas were pretty crappy.
He wanted the Chancellor Choi to have three boobs. I mean, like,
You keep going to that.
Yeah, I know, but it's one of those things that I'm just like, why? I mean, like, it doesn't need to happen.
I'm just thinking of, you know, that Star Trek the Animated Series episode where it's the plant people, and I guess Roddenberry was the one who wanted the plant people.
Yeah.
And that's just so stupid.
And he's like, what?
What?
Why are you doing this? You're ruining it.
I mean, Roddenberry could get a little off, but he thought so differently in some ways that it really changed. I mean, let's face it, it changed a lot of us because of his, you know, he was so radical in his thought process. And, you know, it's like anything. There's some things people throw out there. It just does not stick to the wall at all.
I mean, like, I think what Steve Jobs, like, said, like, genius is, like, you know, or, you know, being able to change the world is just having the foresight and just the, I guess, balls to say that you can. And Gene Roddenberry was that person.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to change the world. And the way he did, or wanted to change the world, or, you know, his vision of the world, how it should be, was Star Trek. And you know, the overallness of it was great. But some of the minutiae... It's good to have your ideas challenged every now and then.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and he wasn't really open to his ideas being challenged. Yeah.
It would have been cool if it was like a band kind of idea where you had like everyone come up from the same street level and, you know, then you got famous and then you had your own group that could kind of say like, that's kind of bullshit. You know, that song's not that good. You know, like, let's write a better song or let's come up with a better guitar riff kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't have that sounding board. There was nobody there to do it other than him not having success for periods of time.
Well, it's been a very interesting episode, a very interesting topic to talk about. And as Synthaholics usually goes, Aaron and I have very different ideas. I'm sorry, I want to fight about it. No, but that's what makes it interesting.
I get just one question for you guys. I mean, if you were put into Sisko's position, would you have done what he did?
Not the way he did it.
How would you have done it?
Obviously, I don't have the whole scope of the Federation and Romulan world at this point, you know, like what he would have. But I would hope that there would be a different, more diplomatic way to bring the Romulans into the war quicker than using Garak. That's all my point is. I don't know... As Spock would say, this is in the purview of the diplomats. You know,
send Dax in to argue with them since she played such a good Romulan.
I don't know. I don't have the clear answer to it. If you sat me down,
wait. Ask Picard to do it. He'd be able to figure it out.
Picard.
But just call Picard up. But since Sisko hates Picard so much, he had to do it his own way.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's
how you could have done it.
Yeah, just call Picard up.
Just go up with, hey, Picard, I know you. I'm not great at the diplomacy. You need to do that maneuver, Picard.
Yeah.
You need to do the Picard maneuver. And if Riker can do the Riker maneuver at the same time and have a nice little, you know, three-way, you know, that would be great. Romulans might appreciate that.
The ships rubbing up against each other.
This Romulan warbird's got a lot.
Through the uniform. Oh yeah.
I mean, if you ask me to sit down and write like a alternate take on that, I think I could probably come up with something, but it might not be great television.
It probably wouldn't be. No, it probably wouldn't be at all. Sorry, I don't mean to.
No, I agree. I know. I think it would. I don't think it would be as interesting. I mean, obviously, Garak is great.
Well, thank God it wasn't the original pitch. They wanted it to be very Jake heavy.
Oh, God.
That would be rough.
The original pitch was very Jake heavy. Then the second pitch was having Jake and Sisko go at each other. And then what we got, Jake wasn't even involved at all. Thank goodness. Thank you, Ronald D. Moore. Thank you for not having Jake involved in this.
Are you being funny or are you being serious or both?
I am absolutely serious.
He does not like Jake.
Really?
I cannot stand Jake.
I know you don't like Jake, but were they really considering making it a Jake-heavy episode?
Oh, yes.
Why? That would have...
I think there. Obviously he was going to have to defend his decisions to Jake.
It was supposed to be like Jake was supposed to find out about like a Watergate-ish situation, and Sisko is going to have to try to downplay it and like, don't look into this, you know, whatever. And then they wanted to make it like, you know, Sisko versus Jake, where like, you know, they're kind of like, you know, going at each other. And then Ronald D. Moore was like, we can't have them go at each other. The audience won't believe it. Their bond is way too strong at this point,
right,
after season six for them to go like at each other's throats. It just wouldn't work. And so thankfully they showed Jake completely out of this episode. Unfortunately, Colomini got caught up in this too, and he does not show his face in this episode, unfortunately.
What is O'Brien really going to bring to the table here?
What is he going
to
fix a turbo lift or something? I mean,
he's like,
he's fixing a turbo lift when they're in the turbo lift. Yeah. And he's like, oh my God, what they're planning. What am I to do?
Oh my, he's blushing.
Keiko! He's like, oh my gosh, my daughter got stuck in a time rift.
Oh my gosh.
It
could have taken a different route.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
It's a good episode. I'm not bagging on the episode because it's not a fun episode. But it's more because it just doesn't hold to the tenets I believe Star Trek should be. That's my biggest beef.
Can't wait
with
to see how this new series is going to turn out next year.
I know.
And we'll be talking about that for sure, guys.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, I agree there, and I hope that the new series does not go along the same lines as Deep Space Nine or even Voyager, and even Enterprise. Enterprise was pretty heavy military-esque kind of feel to it, and I don't want that to happen. Although I like this episode, and I like that it got kind of grimy and kind of dirty, I would like to see the new series harken back to that true spirit of Star Trek.
Yeah,
Roddenberry's spirit of Star Trek.
My feeling, like going along with what you're saying there, is that we need beacons for all of us to kind of hang on to, and it's not that we believe that everyone's going to be like this all the time, but you know, we need a Star Trek that gives you hope of the future, that we can be better than what we are. We're not just a war-like civilization, or we're all ready to, you know, walk out in the street and stab each other and shoot each other, you know, that we are better than that. And I sincerely believe that a lot of people are better than that. I think there's just a small percentage that make things worse.
The vocal minority.
Or the crazy minorities that go out and do something like that, you know, like go out and, you know, blow themselves up or, you know, shoot somebody up in a convenience store or whatever, you know, that kind of junk. But, yeah, we need these kind of things. We need a Superman that doesn't kill. We need a Star Trek that, you know, makes us believe that, oh my God, yeah, I can be better. I can be somebody more than I am right now. Even if you'll never achieve that, even if you just keep on trying to be that person, you're much better for trying.
Yeah.
And that's my take on the world.
And no, I agree with you, because you can't always have art imitating life, because you never get to think outside that box. You never realize what else it could have, what else the future or your life or anything could be,
right,
without having that, like you said, that beacon of hope.
Yeah,
you know, that
you could be something more, something
more, something different.
Well, with Rod Roddenberry working on the series, hopefully he will hold his father's, you know, torch and.
I would hope so. It's hard to say, because I mean, Roddenberry, even by his own admission, said that he wasn't even hardly aware of the series, other than that it existed for a long time.
Oh, for a long time. And, but I mean, he did the whole, you know, Trek Nation.
Delved
into his father.
I understand. Yeah, I know what he did, but I mean, it's more of the thing of that, you know, you have to sort of have that in you, you know, that deep in your bones, that nobody can dissuade you that this is the way to be. And for all his faults, Gene Roddenberry did believe that, and he held to it even when it was, you know, people were ready to walk out the deal because he wasn't going to fold.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Have that kind of conviction.
Yeah. That kind of conviction. That's something to be said. And I don't, you know, I'm not, and I don't know how his son is on that playing field. That's all.
I mean, I'm sure he's better now since he did Trek Nation. I mean, that was a huge huge thing he did. So, I mean, I think he's acknowledging of it now.
But the commitment that it takes for a TV show is totally different than a one-time documentary.
Well, he also, I mean, the documentary was like I think he did over like 6 or 7, 8 years. It was a long time he spent on it. And
I stand corrected.
And then. He also, you know, commissioned, you know, the Mission Log podcast. I mean, he got Ken Ray and, you know.
Again, I'm not, like, knocking him whatsoever because I don't really know him other than what I've seen by Trek Nation and a few interviews that I've heard of him. But it's more of, you know, it's nice to do lip service, especially when you're doing a documentary that you know that most of your audience is there to watch because they are big fans of Star Trek and Rod and his father. It's another thing to actually be that person. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
You know, maybe he is that person. I hope he is.
I hope so. Well,
but I don't know.
It was a good conversation, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for having us, Andrew. No, I hope I contributed.
Do you want anyone to follow you on social media, on Twitter or anything?
Oh, hell no. Don't even talk to me. Seriously.
Don't talk to him.
Don't talk to
him. He doesn't want to be talked to.
If you message me, I will ignore it. If you message me again, I can't be held responsible for my actions. All right.
Well, you can. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at Warp 11 on Twitter and at warp11.com. You can find us on Twitter at Synthaholic Duo. You can check out our website at synthaholics.com. You can follow me at David_J_Duncan, Faith at Faith Hertzberg.
You can find me at Blackbird2004. And please leave a review. Give us stars and ratings and iTunes. Many stars.
Many moons.
So we are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher if you want to leave any of those reviews. You can also write us.
Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Definitely write us. Tell us what you think. Tell us if you want to see any subjects or you just even interject on any of the things that we've talked about here in Pale Moonlight.
And we'll read it on the air and we will comment on it like we do everything else.
Yes. We'll kind of riff on what you're talking about. We'll give our reactions.
I might even say something crude.
Most likely we will.
Oh my.
Ultra Woman, we remember you.
Yes. Yeah, and definitely also tell a friend. Tell a friend about Synthaholics. Let them know that we exist. Let them know if they have any friends who are into Star Trek, sci-fi.
Just good words, yeah.
Even goofy podcasts, if they're into something a little fun, let them know that we're out there.
If people like to laugh, let them know about us.
And definitely check us out. We have a Patreon page if you want to give a little money our way to help us grease the wheels, make things a little easier for us.
Attend a con so we can meet you with the fans.
We can shake your hand, come over to your place, make you dinner.
Fix you a drink.
Fix you a drink. Rub your back.
Tie your hair.
I don't know where that was going.
To a radiator.
Okay, scratch that. Oh boy.
Anyways, thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper. And we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Meep, 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 meep.
Alright. Let's just hold it like this. Check 1, 2. Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
Hey,
hey. Hey.